think defining impermanence would probably be valuable. And I know that a lot of you are familiar with the term. But even if you're familiar with it, it's always good to reconsider, you know, other words that describe the concept that you understand. Because I find, like, I like hearing people talk about things that I know quite well, because every time that somebody applies a different set of words to it, it adds a slightly different perspective to the concept. And oftentimes I feel like it broadens my perspective of whatever the thing is. And it's a, you know, useful way to just kind of keep chiseling away at some of the nuance and the context of these ideas that are very, very rich. So, impermanence is an idea in Buddhism that essentially suggests that everything in existence is always dissolving. It's always kind of eroding and going back from whence it came. And a lot of people hear that idea initially and get freaked out by it because they think, oh, well, great. It's kind of like whenever you tell, if you were to tell a kid that the, you know, the sun is going to explode, it's like, oh, cool, thanks for that bit of information that everyone I know and care about and everything I find meaningful, including myself, are all going to be vaporized by the sun whenever it explodes. And likewise with impermanence, you know, whenever we start thinking about that concept, it's like, oh, sweet. So everything is going to basically just rot into nothingness. Which they're like, yeah, that's true. But that's only a small portion of the of the story, you know. And so, you know, we don't have to even look at impermanence through the lens of Buddhism to find it to be true. You can look at nature, which is where I often like to look to vet these conceptual ideas, because these ideas emerge from nature. You know, anything that emerges from the human mind is therefore emerging from nature, because we are nature and our minds are a part of nature. So therefore our ideas are a part of nature. And so whenever we look to nature for answers about these things, I anyway often see a symmetry or a type of pattern recognition that confirms the continuity of an idea. And so in this context, if we look at even something as simple as the seasons, you see impermanence, because you see the blossoming of the flowers, then the falling of the leaves, the dying of the leaves, then the rebirth of the flowers once again, the falling of the leaves, and so forth. If you want a more immediate example, you can look at the sky and you can see a cloud. You can just watch the cloud move across the sky. It's like, there it is 1 minute. It exists, and now it's gone. And now here's another cloud. It exists, and now it's gone. And on and on and on. And so, you know, also, like, water is a good example. If it rains and there's water around outside your house, and you look, obviously that water is not going to just exist there forever. It evaporates. So it was there and then now it's gone again. And that example actually would take us into another concept, which I'll table for now because it'll get us off track. But it's the concept of interdependence, which is a very valuable one to consider and an important one, once again, if we were using the context of Buddhism. And I know I've said this probably a million times. Like, I don't even identify myself as a Buddhist at all. I just find many of the ideas very rich and fruitful and worthwhile. And so I appreciate them and am fascinated by them. And that's why I mention them with some frequency. Anyway, interdependence essentially, very quickly, is that all things are connected to each other, and ultimately that all things are really kind of one. So that's why I mentioned the concept of the rain being there one day and then evaporating. In that evaporation, you know, it goes back into the cloud and then is moved once again, and then it rains once again, and perhaps some of that water is caught by a, you know, system that is filtered, and then we end up drinking that water, and then we pee that water out, and it goes to a treatment plant, and then goes out into the ocean or something, and then is absorbed by, you know, turns into a type of condensation and vapor and what have you, and is drawn back up into the clouds again. It's all this connected cycle that's moving in and out of everything. And also we look at, you know, the water is absorbed by trees and creates food and plants and all the stuff that are always, of course, themselves impermanently expiring and then reemerging as new things. So it's just a way to look at the notion that all things are connected and also depend and count on each other to exist on a very, very deep, fundamental, natural level. So the concept of impermanence, everything is always kind of dissolving. And we can intimately observe this concept. I only laugh because it just is funny to me how unsettling that can sound on the top. It sounds so brooding, you know, but it's really a beautiful concept, and it's not at all. But in meditation, we can quite intimately observe that concept with your own thoughts. And this is where it gets to really useful territory, because whenever you're meditating, if you notice, you know, I don't know what's up with my mind. My mind is usually pretty empty whenever I'm meditating, but there'll be single thoughts. Like one person is allowed on stage at a time. And that comes through a few decades of discipline and practice, and also an ability to focus with my mind and just let all other things pass. But whenever let's say that you have a lot of thoughts and there's a lot of fragments and noise happening in your mind, even those fragments are arising and dissolving like quite rapidly. And to put that out of an abstract context, if you think about it, it's like you have one random idea that comes to mind, and then another random idea, and then another random idea. So each time that your focus switches to that other idea fragment, the one that you were focused on is dissolved, right? It's become impermanent. And so you can watch your mind during meditation, or you don't even have to meditate. Just stop, close your eyes, and pay attention to your thoughts for a minute. And you'll see probably dozens of, you know, little fragments of thoughts arising and falling and arising and falling. And just try and zoom out and just observe that for a minute. Just kind of watch the phenomenon of thought fragments and mental formations arising and falling in your mind. And you can see impermanence happening inside of you in that very moment. There are these ideas that oftentimes we associate strongly with our identity, and then it's gone. And then there's another one, and it's gone. And there's another one, and it's gone. It's very cool to look at it from that perspective. And by cool, I just mean interesting. I don't think that anyone looks at someone as like, man, that person is cool. They are deeply watching the infinite, limitless dissolving of their own flow of consciousness. So anyway, as you watch that, you know, you can begin to see in your mind that the ideas that are flowing through your mind, the thoughts themselves, are impermanent. And I brought up the idea of those relating, our thoughts relating to our identity, on purpose, because this is where we get to a pretty useful way of using impermanence. And that is, so for starters, our thoughts, we often identify with our identities. We think that what we are thinking in the moment, and more importantly, what we have experienced in the past, Because really in the present moment, we're experiencing our idea of the past. We're experiencing a fixed concept of our perception of what happened. And to add another layer of delusion, we're looking at it through the lens of whatever age we were at that time. That's an interesting part of the picture that many people forget. So say that you had an experience whenever you were 10 years old, and let's say it was something unpleasant with a family member or something like that. As a 25-year-old, you have a very clear memory that that scenario went down that way and what it meant to you. But if you revisit it in this moment, you can realize that that is probably partially true, but also it was looked at through the lens of a 10-year-old mind that did not have all of the self-awareness and knowledge about the world that you have now. And so it's a limited memory that feels full. And that's not to denigrate our memories, particularly ones that are challenging. It's just something important to remember that we always are experiencing life through the lens of the time that we experience it. So thoughts from the past that influence us in the present, it's useful to think about them in that way. Like classically, and I mean classically in human experience, you know, you think about the first time that you tried Brussels sprouts as a kid, and you think, oh God, they're gross, you know, and they taste bitter and just weird texture and whatever. And who knows, maybe you loved them when you were a kid, but it's just an example. I was trying to think of a kind of a funny cartoonish example almost. But then now, as an adult, you go to a ramen restaurant and they have those amazing Brussels sprouts, like roasted with kind of a soy sauce that's a little sweet and tangy or whatever. They're amazing. Like for me, I could eat, you know, two portions of those with no problem, and have and will again. But you just look at it like through the filter of that, you know, experience as a kid. You've got this idea that Brussels sprouts are gross. You taste them, they seem gross. And then you hold that idea with you for years until one day, for some reason, you try them again through the lens of your current mind, and it totally realigns your perception. And you release that story, that idea that Brussels sprouts are gross from the past. So if we look at that same concept in relation to ourselves and our ideas of ourselves, you know, we have these concepts of like what we're capable of, what we aren't capable of, our emotional capacity, our intellectual capacity, our ability to feel the value to be able to go for those things in life and those experiences that we really want, and, you know, to live life in the way that we wish we could, to be the person a bit more deeply that we would like to be. But it's very natural. I mean, almost, I don't know why media outlets aren't covering this 24/7, because it's so important and so few people talk about it. But I mean, just the idea that naturally humans are kind of settled on the accumulation of their past ideas of themselves. And it becomes such a foundational aspect of self that it is very difficult for people to get untrapped from the jail of their memories and their imprintations of how they have to be. And impermanence is a tool that you can apply to that that can be very valuable, because once you look outside of yourself and you confirm indeed that nature is in a constant state of dissolving and reemerging, and that things are, you know, interdependent once again, and you can really see that that's true, you can then use that verifiable proof on yourself. Because once again, we are a part of nature. We emerged from nature. And so if you look at those, like just in the same way our bodies are always you know, unfortunately, rotting into with the older we get, they're getting shakier and functioning more poorly, and will eventually turn into mush. Our bodies are impermanent, so are our minds, so are our ideas that we apply and hold about who we are. So if we look at those foundational aspects of self and apply the concept of impermanence, you can realize, like, oh, I can just let these things dissolve. These barriers, these self-limiting thoughts, these deeply intuitive feelings that I am and I must be a certain way, or I have to do this, or I can't do this. Like, that's all nonsense. It's really just imprinted ideas that are stuck in the minds of us from whenever we were, you know, children probably, and had some experience that suggested that was true. Just as, you know, Brussels sprouts are gross. And so looking at any of those things in life that are holding you back, you know, from the various palette of choices I mentioned earlier, or add things to the menu if you like, you know, what, there's kind of a limitless amount of things that we can work with. But if we look at those things and choose one, and then go into a meditative state and just observe that concept, observe that aspect of self and identity that we have applied to ourselves, and then recognize and watch it, you know, through the lens of impermanence. Realize it's just an idea, just a concept. And that if we want, we can let it fade. It's going to fade anyway, but we're just attached to it right now. We're holding on to it, trying to keep it from fading, because we have it associated with this concept of self, which self within itself is also impermanent. Like, you're not the same person you were 10 years ago. You're probably not the same person you were 10 months ago. Things have changed. You think differently. You're doing different stuff. You're moving through the world just a little bit differently. And so whenever you look at those aspects of self that are real sticky, those things that we clutch to almost out of fear, and you apply the concept of impermanence to them, you can realize that they're just delusions. And then you can simply allow them to let their leaves fall off and let them become fertilizer for a new part of yourself that is waiting to bloom.